Right. Time for a movie retrospective. I can't believe that we've been doing these fucking retrospectives this long and we have not done this movie yet.
I thought we did do this movie.
No, we did not.
Okay.
We've done some of the other classics. Like I said, we did, you know, Friday the 13th movies. We did all that kind of stuff. We did other Tobe Hooper movies even. We did Life Force. We did The Funhouse. However, we have not done the granddaddy of all slasher flicks, I guess. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
And actually, I wanted to do it this week because this right here, this Blu-ray, which is very fantastic. Got Leatherface and got Sally on there like that.
Yeah, that's a Steelbook edition.
It is. It's Steelbook. It's beautiful. This was sent to me by Dominic, friend of the show, a very long time ago. And he had, it was like in the pile of movies, and he asked about it the other day, and I was just like, oh, maybe we should do that, because we haven't even done the fucking Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Only one of the most classic horror movies, like, ever made. So, you know, we finally decided to get around to it.
Looks like it got a little bit crushed there. I straightened it out, though.
It's all right. Yeah. This actually has, you know, the movie's been restored since, like, the 40th anniversary edition. This also has four, count 'em, four commentary tracks on there with all different people. Check out this other shit I also got. I think I showed this once on the Ed Gein show, or maybe there was like a picture of it. Look, I have like a little tiny Leatherface toy. They came in a set. There's also a Jason and a Freddy also. And they have little environments and whatnot. I just thought that was super cute. But yeah, so this was a movie. This came out in 1974, obviously. The thing that's very funny to me about this movie is that, and I've seen it probably like a million times. I think I maybe have it memorized. But one of the things, and I think I've brought this up on like a lot of other of our other movie retrospectives when we're talking about movies, and I love the way that everything in this movie, like, people remember this as like a really nasty, like gory, you know, blood fest and everything like that, and it's not. They show hardly anything.
Nothing happens in it. Bunch of screaming. They show fucking gross shit. That's it. But
Nobody
ever really gets hurt in it.
Yeah, I mean, they don't show anybody, like, getting murdered. Like, they don't show.
Right.
They do, but I mean, they don't show. Like, for example,
The cut is so tight, you can't.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. And, like, you guys, there's a really old documentary. I think it's from 2000, and it's on Tubi. And it's about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's basically, it's not so much a documentary. It's basically just interviews with Gunnar Hansen, you know, who has since passed away, obviously, sadly. And some of the other actors in the movie. And the guy that plays the hitchhiker, who is still alive, Edwin Neal, his name is. He said that he has won a lot of bar bets over the years with people who have maybe seen the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but they saw it a long time ago. And they will bet large sums of money that, for example, they saw that meat hook going into that girl's back.
Nope.
Or they saw Franklin, the kid in the wheelchair, getting cut in half with a chainsaw.
Nope.
You didn't see that.
It's all
you
suggestion.
Didn't see it. It's all implied. And the sound design and everything like that. Nope. And it's just watching it again, because I watched it again yesterday, like in preparation. And it's just amazing to me how the way you cut something and the way that you use like sound effects and shit like that really makes you, because I mean, that woman getting hung on the meat hook is like super nasty, even though you don't really see anything.
Yeah.
Just because of her reaction and like kind of the sound that it makes and like you just thinking about it.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's fucking crazy.
First time I saw this movie, I was in Michigan in high school, and I was dating this girl named Cheryl, and it was, you know how it was back when you're high school back then, you know what I mean? You rent some shit from the video store. Maybe, you know, you go on a date. This is before you can really afford to date, you know, because you're in high school. You rent the fucking, rent the video tape. She rented it. She invited me over to her house. We saw that shit in her basement den. And I don't even think we even saw the movie. Just made out through the whole fucking goddamn thing. Made out through the whole goddamn thing.
It's that's very funny to me, making out
through the Chainsaw Massacre.
Because pretty much the whole sound design of this movie, and I love horror movies,
yeah,
but the whole sound design of this movie, like once the shit really starts rolling, like about the 40 minute mark, is pretty much just all chainsaw buzzing and screaming.
Yeah. I think that was the cover she was using to convince her mom that nothing was going on downstairs. I think that's what it was about.
Because all they could hear from downstairs is,
well, I think it was like, well, you know, nothing romantic going to happen. We're going to put the damn chainsaw mask. No, man, we did everything we could do to still keep our damn clothes on. Fucking right. Those are the days, man.
It's just really funny.
Yeah, we were trying to keep our clothes on.
Well, the funny thing, too, okay, so the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like I said, great fucking title, great fucking poster. Now, one thing that they did that was actually kind of clever and actually got it, you know, a lot more attention than it made. I mean, the title obviously got it a lot of attention, but they did the whole thing that it was based on a true story. And even at the beginning, like they have that opening crawl, they were talking about, you know, what you're going to see is like real, blah, blah, blah. That was John Larroquette, by the way, who was on Night Court later on. He got paid, from what I heard, for this, for doing the voiceover narration, he got paid one joint.
Damn. Just did it.
A lot of people didn't get paid on this movie. I'll get into that in a little bit. But, yeah, so it's kind of, like, made to be, like, a true story. It's sort of inspired by a true story, I guess. Like, it's kind of inspired by Ed Gein, just like Psycho is, just like Silence of the Lambs. But the shit that happens in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like, despite what the opening narration would have you believe, that exact shit did not actually happen. It is kind of based on Ed Gein and the fact that
I remember at the time when I first
women's skin and stuff.
But. Remember when the time I first saw it, you know, I was with Cheryl. We were thinking she had seen it already.
Yeah.
I was thinking I was getting ready to see something kind of like Faces of Death.
Oh, right. Yeah.
This is back when Faces of Death had a certain amount of credibility in the high school fucking scene.
I remember those days.
We actually thought that, oh, like, man.
Some of the shit in there was real, but not
much of
it. Some of it
was real, most of it wasn't. Most of it was fake. Or just, you know, bullshit that they got off fucking newsreels and stuff.
Yeah.
And really, by today's standards, not graphic.
Yeah.
But freaked us out back then. This one, man, I think the suspense was kind of like, yeah, this is going to be some bad shit. But I never got to see it, you know, I'm talking about for that first time. Like I said, hormones took over. And I'd look up every now and then and I was like, yeah, it ain't the best. But you know what I mean? I saw it again later and was able to watch it. It did kind of have that fucking nasty, illicit feel to it that Faces of Death kind of had.
Yeah, it
like
looks
it was
like
an underground movie.
Snuff film.
Like a snuff film.
I mean, the cinematography is nice. Yeah.
You look at it now, you know, fucking, you know, now that I'm in my wiser years, I understand what they did when they shot it. It was pretty brilliant by today's standards. But back in those days, this was considered a garbage movie, though. Not respected.
Well, you know what, though? It was kind of mixed.
Not in the mainstream.
It was kind of mixed, because when it did come out, like, you know, you did have, you know, some of the critics that were just like, oh, it's, you know, just
schlock.
It's trash.
Yeah.
But a surprising amount of critics, including Roger Ebert,
understood what they saw.
Actually, like, thought it was, like, a pretty damn good movie. And actually, like, in France and in Europe and stuff like that, even though they had some bans and stuff, it was, like, played at all kind of, like, film festivals and shit like that. So I think it did, you know, it got mixed reviews and some people thought it was just like a throwaway slasher movie. Yeah. But I think largely people did realize what Tobe Hooper was trying to do with it. Because
did
kind of have a deeper message to it, I guess. Because the thing about it is that, and like I said, it's brilliantly shot. I mean, it's the art design, like the cinematography is just really, really nice. It's just when you watch the shit, it makes you, it just envelops you in this world. It's like this horrible, hot, Texas, nasty. It's like you can almost smell it. This is almost like the world's first scratch and sniff movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you can almost smell the rot and the stink and the blood of like the cattles and all, the cattle slaughterhouse and all that kind of shit.
Yeah,
it almost smells like that.
Yeah, and the characters are kind of believable. They have that 70s, late 70s vibe to them. They kind of seem like they're real people. And even the bad guys kind of seem like they're real people. They're fucking freaky. Pretty freaky.
Yeah. And watching it again, it's like, I feel like, and you know, there have been like a lot of, you know, obviously there was Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, which with Dennis Hopper and you know, Chop Top and all of that, which was actually more like a straight up super gory horror comedy. Fun yeah. fact, the first
I've
time
never
I
seen it.
Oh, it's good. You would probably
it.
Love it.
Yeah.
The first time I saw that was actually at a fucking slumber party.
Yeah.
So that's what a bunch of little girls get up to. When
Chainsaw Massacre, I really kind of, to me, I think it's kind of comparable to another movie that I like. Even though I think I kind of like the other one a little bit better, The Hills Have Eyes.
Well, The Hills Have Eyes was actually inspired by this. Wes okay. Craven was inspired by this movie. Okay, actually, yeah. like a lot of people. In fact, Rob Zombie's whole entire movie-making career is inspired by the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He has spent his yeah. his whole entire life trying to recapture
yeah.
the magic that of the original, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
That original Hills Have Eyes, I loved that movie. Mm-hmm. First time I saw it, I was like, wow, that was pretty awesome. Good idea. Cannibals living up in the fucking hills. Inbred cannibal mutants. They were just inbred cannibals. I don't yeah. think they were mutants, were they? No.
Not really, because no. they kind of looked like...
Later on in the second one, they said they were radiation mutants.
Yeah.
But no, they were just inbreds. And remember, they had the cute girl was trying to get away from the family.
Yeah.
They had one of them that was cute. She was trying to get away. Which that was a good idea because not everybody in a family, you know, is going to be bad. Some people aren't going to be putting up with it.
Yeah.
Putting up for it. So that's pretty good.
I mean, the thing about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like I said, not only was Wes Craven inspired to make Hills Have Eyes, but also John Carpenter cited it as a big influence on Halloween, like in the sense that even though the two movies are not that similar, but in the sense of like a slasher movie about a villain that, you know, uses a power tool and shit like that, because that was kind of like a new thing. Also, another thing that I find interesting about it too is that Leatherface, at least in the first movie, is, I don't want to say he's sympathetic, but he is kind of sympathetic, only because the way Gunnar Hansen plays him, and if you watch interviews with Gunnar Hansen where he's talking about like how he got into the role, was that he basically thought of Leatherface as someone who was, like, mentally challenged. And he actually went to, like, a special school and was, like, watched the students, like, walk around and, like, you know, how they talked and stuff like that. So he wanted to, like, you know, put that across. So Leatherface is sympathetic in the sense that I don't think he really knows what he's doing is yeah. bad. Because I think that the family that he's grown up in, they've basically, I mean, their whole lives revolved around the slaughterhouse. The implication being that they've been put out of work since, you know, they don't need somebody with the sledgehammer to, like, kill the cows anymore. Now they have, like, the little gun and it goes much faster. So it's like all these people have been put out of work. And but they've just been raised around, you know, just killing cattle and hogs and stuff like that with sledgehammers. And so you're imagining that Leatherface has probably just grown up in this environment. He's mentally challenged. He can't really talk. And it's like, that's all he knows how to do. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's another one. There's another movie that was kind of a ripoff of this because you reminded me of it. That's also pretty good, called Motel Hell.
Yeah.
I like that one too.
This might have
been... It's in that same genre. Or
was
same
this
league.
Like the first hillbilly horror? I don't know.
It's hard to tell.
I can't really... Because there might have been some before this.
Was Deliverance out before this?
Oh, shit.
That was kind of like a hillbilly horror movie.
Deliverance might have been 72? Shit, now I don't even know, yeah. like offhand. But yeah.
Deliverance is another good one. Not quite horror. More like action-adventure...
Thriller type with some horror elements.
With some horror elements in there. That's where Squeal Like a Pig comes from. Oh,
in case you didn't know.
Oh, fuck, like what's his name? Beatty?
Youngsters out there.
Yeah.
Ned Beatty.
Yeah. Ned Beatty found out that if you're kind of a chubby low T male, another man might find you sexually attractive. That's some fun.
Or at least,
he might be inbred. He goes, hey, you got a pretty mouth. Boy, you got a pretty mouth. Remember that?
Yeah,
that shit's fucking creepy.
Yeah,
look like a little pig, don't he?
I kind of feel bad for Ned Beatty because I feel like for his entire life after people would just come up to him in the street and go, hey, squeal like a pig. And he'd be like, yeah.
You got a pretty mouth, boy.
But yeah. So so let's actually get back to talking about Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So like I said, this came out in 1974. The idea for it, the rough idea was from Ed Gein, you know, the wearing the skin and, like, making shit out of bones and all that kind of crap. But the whole chainsaw thing, which I find very funny, the whole, you know, thing of the chainsaw being used as a weapon, Tobe Hooper came up with that when he was at a department store, I think it was Sears, like, during the Christmas season one year, like, in 1972 or whatever it was. And it was getting, and he was like in the hardware section, like happened to be like in the chainsaw aisle, and everything started getting like really crowded. Like everyone was like packing around and stuff. And he's like, and I suddenly just thought to myself, man, I know a really quick way to like cut through this crowd. I could just pull one of these chainsaws off and just go like that. So that kind of gave him the idea for doing it. Now, interestingly, him and this guy named Kim Henkel co-wrote the script. They came up with it, and then they were looking for financial backing. Now, as it turned out, what they ended up doing, they got like all the actors and shit to do it, and these were like all local, like from Austin, Texas, because that's obviously where this was shot. And, you know, some were like comedians and students and shit like that. So they put them all in the movie, and they're basically like, well, we can't really pay you until we get a distributor. Now, after the movie was done, it cost somewhere between $60,000 and $140,000 to make it, because I think initially the budget was $60,000 and they went a little bit over. So after they were done, it took like a really long time to find a distributor, like almost a year. And like all the actors and shit that were in it were like, is this movie ever going to come out? Or, you know, what's going on with that? Are we ever going to get paid? And what ended up happening was that the distribution company that finally agreed to do it was like connected to the mob. And so they ended up only paying like, after all their fees and shit, like they only ended up paying like $8,000 like to the producers. That had to be like divided among everybody, like the crew and the actors and everything. And it wasn't until New Line Pictures bought the rights like in the 80s that anybody actually saw any fucking money from this thing. Mm-hmm. Even though in its first theatrical run, it was a massive success. It ended up making $30 million in 1974 dollars, which is like $151 million in today's money.
Damn.
Which, on a movie that only cost $140,000 to make, I mean, that's pretty fucking good.
A lot of that has to do with the title.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you have a title.
It's a genius fucking title.
If you have a title that's sensational, back in the 70s, you'd sell a bunch of fucking movies.
Well, yeah.
Especially if you were able to get into theaters back then, you know, which they evidently they did.
And you would think
Night of Living Dead would have fucking raked in a fucking shit ton of movie, but the paperwork was so fucked up on Night of Living Dead, you can't make a dollar off
making,
of it.
Yeah, they didn't end up making money. Yeah. And like I said, they didn't end up making much money off of this one either until much later, like when another distribution, because the mob took most of it for the distribution. But millions and millions and millions of people like did see this movie. And it helped that, you know, everyone thought it was a true story, because like I said, there was no internet back then. You couldn't really check.
Yeah.
So they, you know, the way that they market it as a true story, the title of it, and the fact that a lot of countries were coming out, like, you know, calling for it to be banned and shit like that.
That just
So that just, like, helped it
Streisand
become,
effect.
Like, this really big, like, phenomenon, which it actually was.
Yeah, back in the 70s, you'd have all little kids, kids like my fucking babysitter Kimmy back then smoking dope going, we got to see that movie.
Well, yeah.
We got to see that one.
Like I said,
especially out in California. Oh, we got to see that one. That one's a true story. They don't want us to know about that one. We
they don't want us to know.
Yeah. That's if you guys don't know, back in these days, my babysitter, she looked, her name is Kimmy. She looked just like Princess Leia.
Mm-mm-mm.
Princess Leia. I even proved it to Jenny. I showed a fucking picture.
Yeah.
Looked like Princess Leia. And she would have fucking loved this movie, her and her friends.
Well, yeah. This is
a
good
that's the kind
movie.
Of shit that kids liked back then.
And you know,
she was like 14, 15, so they would have fucking loved that shit.
And you know what's really ironic about this movie too is that because of all the, you know, calls to be banned and all this other kind of shit, was that the reason why Toby Hooper, why there are so many you know, the murders aren't explicitly shown, is because Toby Hooper wanted to get a PG rating. Because he
good
thought...
Good idea, yeah, good
well,
idea.
Well, he's like, well, because it will, you know, the widest possible audience. You can get, like, teenagers to see it and shit like that.
Yeah.
So they submitted it, and at first they wanted to give it an X rating.
Yeah.
Even though, like I said...
It didn't show anything.
Okay, so really the only... Everything is implication. They just kind of, like, show everything. The only really gross shit, other than, like, the set design and the bones and, like, the situation, I guess, is gross.
Dead pigs and shit. Animals?
And they actually did use real dead animals. You know, they didn't kill any animals, obviously, but they got them off the side of the road.
Oh, okay. Did roadkill some of them?
Yeah. Some of them were roadkill. Yeah. And I think one of the guys on the crew knew somebody that was a taxidermy guy, and he borrowed some shit from him, or was a veterinarian too.
Yeah.
And so they borrowed some shit from him. But also, so everything is implication. I think the only gross shit in it is The scene at the end when the hitchhiker gets run over by the truck, and even that, like, they show it, but it's not like there's not blood flying everywhere or anything like that. And the scene where at the very end, where Leatherface, like, where the truck driver like throws a wrench at his head and he falls over, and the chainsaw goes into his leg. Well, they do actually show that. Funny thing about that scene was that, okay, so this movie has, like I said, it's so grubby, and it's like very documentary like, even though it's really nice looking, and like I said, it's really like you can just feel the stink and like the heat and everything. The reason why I think it has that is that a lot of the shit was real. Like a lot of the all the dead animals were real. The heat was real for sure, and I'll get into that when I talk about the dinner scene at the end where everybody's just losing their shit. That was a real chainsaw with real thing on it, like they just had to be careful not to hit each other with it. Like the hammer they use at the end on Sally, that's a real hammer. So shit like that. And so the funny thing was, I was watching this interview with Gunnar Hansen where he was talking about that scene where this chainsaw, which is a real chainsaw, and fell on his leg and like, cut it open like that. He's like, so what they did was they put the jeans on, and then they put like, they packed in like some kind of guts, because they used real guts mostly, like real guts, some fake blood, and then they put like a metal cuff like over it.
That'd work.
So he's like, what ended up happening? So he's like, so I dropped the fucking shit on my leg, and he's like, it went to the metal
In the
cuff.
slid, how much I bet.
No, it went to the metal cuff, and then it heated the metal cuff up so much
Oh man, so
that he thought, and then he saw the blood spurting, and he didn't know if it was real blood or fake. Like, because it felt like it had really gone into his leg because of the heat. And he's like, so I didn't know. Like, I thought my leg had been cut
Yeah,
open.
this movie was responsible for a lot of stuff that happened in video game culture too. The whole idea that a chainsaw is a weapon kind of came from this movie, as
Well,
far as
yeah,
I
because
know.
this is, I think this is the first one.
The first time I ever saw a chainsaw in a video game was a fucking video game we had in the early 80s called Splatterhouse, where you played a Jason-like character with a fucking hockey mask. You could pick up shotguns and chainsaws and shit like that.
I think I remember that game.
And then you're going through a haunted house and trying to survive.
There was a game based on this movie, too,
Well, anyway,
interestingly.
then you started seeing it in Doom, a video game series called Doom, where you could get a damn chainsaw. That was like one of the
In Evil
weapons.
Dead, the Evil Dead movies, like they used the chainsaw thing too, where he like
But as
Evil Dead
far
2
as
actually.
from what I remember, though, you know what I mean? When Doom first came out and Splatterhouse and everything, the implication was that, or what it was culturally hearkening back to, was fucking Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That's what it was.
I mean,
That's what
this
it
is a
was.
hugely, hugely influential horror movie. I mean, I feel like if this hadn't been made, like a whole fucking genre of other horror movies might not exist. You know what I mean? Just because this was so influential. So yeah, one thing I wanted to talk about too. So like I said, I think everybody knows like the fucking plot of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre at this point is like there's five young people. They're actually going back to their the sister and brother, like Sally and Franklin Hardesty. She's the blonde girl. He's the paraplegic guy. Their relatives live in this remote town, or they used to. And at the very beginning, you find that someone's been robbing graves, much like Ed Gein did, and like making all these constructions out of, which, like I said, that's a fucking, the opening sequence of this is great with like the pachoo, with like the fucking corpses and shit like that. It's fucking great. And then they pull back and they're like, there's two corpses like on this like weird gravestone monument type of thing, like baking in the Texas sun. And so they have heard about this, all this grave robbing, and they're going to this town with their friends, like to see if their grandpa's grave has been dug up. So they actually do have a reason to be going there, and they do find out that their grandpa's grave wasn't one of the ones. But then they said, oh, well, let's go look at my, our grandparents' old house, which is abandoned now, but there's like a swimming hole, and we can do all this kind of other kind of shit. So I was watching Dr. Wolfula, who is also a very funny channel. He does like horror reviews. He dresses up like a little werewolf. It's very funny. And so he was talking about this movie, and he called like all the people in the van like the Scooby-Doo gang, which it kind of is when you think about it. This you
Kind of like someone
got
like
your Fred,
Scooby-Doo.
got your Shaggy, got your Velma, got your Daphne, kind
Might
of.
have been where the idea came from.
It might have been like go in there in the van. Now I like the way that they have the four characters, like the two couples who are like quasi-normal, like hippie-ish kind of people, like you would see in the 70s, and then they have Franklin who is a huge pain in the ass. Not only because he's in a wheelchair, but also because he's like a whiny bitch all the time. So it's like, I like that they started out the movie with that conflict. Like, Franklin has been brought along because his sister was going along, and like, everyone, no one's like overtly mean to him, but you can tell that everyone's just kind of like, oh, here we go. Like, you know, everything's a pain in the ass because he's constantly whining, and also like because of his wheelchair, he's, you know, everything's more difficult. So there's some conflict even before the, you know, they meet the cannibals or anything. So then it's, so you have that going, and then they pick up a hitchhiker because 70s and that's just what you did. And then this hitchhiker is super creepy and weird, and talks about head cheese and talks about how he used to work at the slaughterhouse and how it used to be so much better, like when they killed the cows with the sledgehammer instead of the air gun and all this other kind of shit. And he just gets weirder and weirder, starts taking pictures of them, like cuts his own hand open, cuts Franklin's arms open finally, so they kick him out. And one thing that Dr. Wolfilo pointed out that I didn't realize was that after they kick the hitchhiker out and they're driving away, and he like goes like that on the side of the van with the blood, I guess he was like marking the van so that when they stopped at like the gas station, which is, you know, where the cook works, who was also a member of the family, which they didn't know at the time, then he'll know, hey, we might want to kill and eat these people because they were assholes or whatever. Right. But yeah, so because everyone's kind of working together. So they end up they go to the abandoned house. Two of them go off, and they're looking for gasoline because, you know, they stop at the gas station. There's no gas there. And so they see this other house with a generator. They figure they can ask them for gas. But it turns out it's the Leatherface residence, or the Sawyer residence, because that's the last name of the family, which I don't think you find out until the second part, actually. But I have to say that one of my favorite scenes in this is the scene, the first time you see Leatherface. I love that there is like no buildup. This movie doesn't have a score per se. Really the score of it is just like industrial noises, kind of like, or slaughterhouse type noises. It's like pigs squealing, you know, metal scraping against metal, shit like that. And it really kind of like lends to the whole atmosphere of it.
Yeah, it makes sense that you say that, because this later on, there's a band called Skinny Puppy, Jenny and I know. They use a lot of little cuts and clips and audio samples from this movie and the sequel. And Skinny Puppy music is kind of like that.
Yeah.
A bunch of samples of squealing things and machines. So maybe, could be that Skinny Puppy got some of their ideas from soundtracks of this movie.
I imagine they probably did. Because like, yeah, I said, the only music that you hear in this is like, you know, when they're in the van and like the music is on the radio. That's like the only music you hear in this. The rest of the time it's just scraping.
If you guys have never heard of Skinny Puppy, go on YouTube and look at some of Skinny Puppy's early music. Like something off of Damn, Mind to the Perpetual Intercourse. That's a good album.
Yeah.
What was the other one with the fucking God's Gift Maggot? What was that? What was the name of that album?
I can't remember.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, so
Cleansefold, Manipulate, maybe.
Yeah.
Something like that.
But the first time you see Leatherface, I really, really like, it's super quiet. Kirk is going into this house. Like, he hears somebody in there, but he's like, you know, he needed some gasoline. So he was like, opens the screen door and he's like calling out for somebody. And then he hears like this noise in the background. So he thinks there's somebody back there, and he goes back, and there's this really great, I love that they didn't do a close-up. I love that they didn't, like, lead up to it. There's no, like, musical sting or anything. It's just, like, he walks to the back, Leatherface pops out, bashes him in the head with a fucking hammer, and he falls on the ground and he starts fucking twitching, and then, like, Leatherface drags him away and just closes the door. And it's, like, from, like, the end of the hall. I really, really like that introduction. I just think that's really, really cool, the way they did that. Instead of, like, going like, hey, it's Leatherface, you know what I mean? Like, it's this new villain. It's just kind of like, because I feel like the Sawyer family, their whole thing, even though they're all crazy and they're all cannibals and shit like that, but I feel like, other than the hitchhiker, who does seem to enjoy inflicting pain just because, I feel like the rest of the family, they're just kind of like, well, we just got to kill people. And they're like not, I think even the cook even says at some point, he's like, you know, it's sometimes you just have to do things, doesn't mean you have to like it. So I feel like it's almost like a practical concern. It's like, well, we just need meat, so whack, you know. They're not torturing them, they're not doing anything like that. Really, Sally is the only one that gets fucking tortured, sort of, like at the end. And yeah, so that scene in particular, the dinner scene, is probably what makes this movie infamous. Because, you know, once all of, because really the most of the Scooby-Doo gang at the beginning, I mean, they get dispatched pretty quickly. And Sally is kind of the last one standing. And so she gets tied up. They decide they're going to play with their food for a little while, I guess, before they kill her. So they tie her to a chair, and there's this really like horrifying scene, like where she's just tied to this chair and screaming, and there's like meat on the table, and they're all like taunting her and shit. And then they want Grandpa like to come down, who looks like a fucking withered corpse, and they want him to fucking kill her, even though he's barely alive.
Yeah, I remember that scene. Remember that was the scene. That was one of the scenes that really stood out.
Yeah.
That was some creepy shit. The old man trying to get. They're holding the girl down and trying to get the old man to
And he
kill her.
keeps like
He's too
driving.
weak.
And like I said, that was a real hammer. So they had to like be really careful, like not to actually like bash her brains in, because it was like
It's pretty
really,
good.
yeah. So this scene, I was watching like all these interviews with you know, the actors and stuff. The scene, I think, at the dinner table is probably only 5 to 7 minutes long. It took them 26 hours to shoot it. And they had to do it kind of all at once, just because they didn't have a lot of money on this movie. Very famously, everyone's costumes and you know, mask, like latex applications and shit like that, they couldn't wash them because they were afraid that the laundromat would lose them, or that it would change color and the continuity would be fucked up, or something like that. And Grandpa, they only had, I think, 3 appliances for him. Ironically, the guy that played Grandpa was like one of the youngest dudes on the cast. Well, that was a really, really young dude. That appliance was made, I believe, by like a plastic surgeon. I can't remember the guy's name, but he made like the old man appliance. So he only had one of those, or two, a couple of those. So when they did that scene, they had to shoot it all in one go, so he wouldn't have to put all of it back on again because they didn't have any more spare. So they're in this fucking farmhouse in Texas in August. This farmhouse had no air conditioning and no ventilation.
And you had all those dead animals in there.
And there was all these dead animals, and because they didn't want the light like fucking up, they had all the windows like blacked out because it was daylight, but it was supposed to be nighttime. So they didn't want to have to like, you know, change for the lighting if when the lighting changed outside, because it took so long to shoot it. So it's like, so everything, and they had all the dead animals, like the bones and everything like that. So that all stunk. If you watch like the dinner scene, they have like meat on the plates, and they said we couldn't move that because of the continuity again. Like, so that was decomposing. There was flies and shit. Everyone's clothes they'd been wearing for like a month without washing them in the Austin in the summer. So everybody smelled horrible, and there's just no air, there's no nothing. They said when we're shooting that scene, it took 26 minutes. They're like, every time they yelled cut, like a whole bunch of them would have to run to one window and barf like out the window, because the smell and shit like that was so bad, and it was so hot. So they said when you see that dinner scene, everyone is like legit deranged, because this was like near the end of the shoot. It's like everyone was just kind of over it and was just like
You know
not
what?
even in their right minds anymore.
What's funny about this movie, and the reason why we're, and, you know, 9/10 of this movie is basically historical context. It's funny, you know what I mean? Again, if you were to make a movie like this today, it probably just wouldn't even be noticed. But because this is like one of the first movies of its type, and the time in which it came out, it was one of the first ones, and it's just, you know, people are still talking about it today.
Yeah.
It's just it's well made. It's just weird how being a first makes a fucking huge
Well,
difference.
yeah.
And you know, you can't really do it. You can't recreate it. You
Yeah,
know,
because like
can't
I
recreate
said,
this.
look at how much impact this had, and think of how people perceived this movie as being super violent, super gory, and it's not really. I mean, it's all, like I said, it's all in your imagination, but I think that's what makes it brilliant, Because they didn't need to show, like, and I'm not, like, shitting on movies that are really gory, because I like, you know, gore gags as much as the next person. But the fact that he could craft a movie like this that just made you feel fucking dirty and just is really, like, uncomfortable to watch and just, like, this nasty, grimy, like, fucking horrifying movie. But he didn't have to show much of anything. It was all, like, your own mind, like, doing the fucking job on you.
I just find it amazing that you could do this again and it wouldn't be noticed.
Well, they did, actually. Yeah. Okay, so there was a second... There was a sequel, which is, like I said, was more of a horror comedy because it kind of went more in that direction. Which, okay, fine. The second one is actually really good. It is super, super over-the-top gory, but it's also hilarious. Other than that, I haven't really seen any of the other, because I think there was a sequel called Leatherface that was kind of, or a prequel, I don't even know which one it was. Now, there was a remake.
Well, those are licensed remakes and stuff that I'm talking about. You could have a person not having that has nothing to do with Texas Chainsaw Massacre or anything. You could just make a movie kind of like this using this technology and this and no backing and no real money. You could make it and it wouldn't be noticed.
Well, yeah.
Because there's so much of it.
And the reason that it wouldn't be noticed nowadays because of this movie.
Yeah, so...
Because somebody already did it.
It's just... Being first is very fucking important and just about in everything. But it's just amazing to me. Like Night of the Living Dead. Great movie.
Yeah.
It was the first one like it. It didn't make any money because they didn't fucking fill out the paperwork right. So it's copyright. It's public domain. Okay. Yeah. But you can go out and make another movie just like Night of the Living Dead. It would never be a classic.
Well, yeah.
Because that already happened.
Yeah.
That already happened, and it happened back then.
So much of it, like you said, is cultural context.
It's cultural context. That's 9/10 of it. And if you want to make a classic movie to be remembered for all times today, it's got to be totally original.
You got to do something wildly different.
Wildly different, and man, that's hard to do because everyone's trying to do that.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, you can't really make another zombie movie. You can't make a slasher movie. You can't. I mean, you can, but you'd have to go really out there.
You
got to
do something
concept.
That people are like, what the fuck?
And you also have to, not only would you have to go way out there with the concept, but you also have to make it enjoyable enough and not off-putting enough that people aren't going to go, nah.
A lot of it has to do with what the thresholds of the people are at the time. You know, when we were watching this movie, it was fucking far out. You know,
well, yeah, because there was nothing really like this. Not really.
But now, you know, the standards are set so high. I mean, the only thing that's going to be really far out if you actually kill somebody on screen. That'll be far out. But you'll also go to fucking prison.
But yeah, please don't do that.
And they got guys doing that. They're called serial killers. And you can see their shit. You know what I mean? Like that fucking crazy dude that ate his Chinese boyfriend. The one that ran over to Europe and got caught. What was that sucker's name? Anyway, he made a film of himself killing and eating that kid, and it's not a good movie.
Well, Armin Mivas did that too, but it's like it was a 4-hour video. I don't think he was trying to make a movie; he was just trying to document it.
But you know, dumb, crazy.
Well, yeah, that is dumb, and I feel like that's not even original because they've been making snuff movies and like fake snuff movies like since the '60s or earlier.
Yeah, fakes.
So that's what I mean. So I feel like even if you really did do it, nowadays everybody'd be like, like no one would care.
Yeah, like dude, you killed that dude. That wasn't even original. That scene.
Yeah, seeing it. Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. It's like people are like really.
You're ripping off that other guy. That other movie. You're ripping off a movie. You know, I saw that movie.
The thing about it though is that even because I watch like you know a lot of other horror critics that are my age, and I've watched some that are younger, and I do feel like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original, does actually have a very large fan base among younger people. So I do think that younger people see the artistry behind it, see the originality. Because I think sometimes you have to, like you said, you see it in the context of its time.
Yeah.
And it also kind of had something to say about, you know, the way that, you know, with all the shit about the slaughterhouse, it's like, look at what's happening to the slaughterhouse. And like, this family is also doing this. Kind of talk about how shitty people are to each other. Yeah. There's a lot of like the kind of Vietnam era stink about it, which, you know, a lot of shit happened. And I think that Tobe Hooper said that one of the things that he wanted to convey with the based on a true story thing, which is like not just because it was like, you know, better for marketing because everybody's like, ooh, true story, I want to see that. But he's like also because of the whole like thing where, you know, now the government is lying to you because of like Watergate and Vietnam and everything like that. So he was kind of trying to make a statement about that also. Like, so trying to, he's like, hey, I'm just kind of lying to you, like making this movie. So, but so there's a lot more going on in this fucking movie.
It kind of like, has this janky taste to it, too. It looks like it's some kind of an illicit crime scene photo. And the fucking, the acting is good, but in a bad way, it's good. It's it almost kind of like Manos Hands of Fate at times, but like a higher caliber version of that movie. You know
it's a lot, I mean, it's a million times better looking.
Yeah, a lot better looking. But there's just something awkward about the acting in it. You know what I mean? It's almost kind of like it's real. It's just weird. You know what I mean? Didn't you notice
that's
that
what I mean.
It
is kind of, it is very documentary-like.
It's kind of weird, you know, the way, the tone of the movie. But that's what's adding to it. It feels very cheap, but very effective.
It's immersive, like I said. It's almost like a sensory experience.
Yeah, and it's Hills Have Eyes has moments of that in it too. Depends what scene you're talking about, but it's a pretty good movie. It's a pretty good movie.
I mean, the thing,
like you said, some critics saw it for what it was. They knew
a
what
lot
they,
did. I feel
they knew
like.
What they were doing. They knew the tone that they wanted.
And there, yeah. So much of it, like I said, in so many of the shots. Like the shot where they first, like before even anybody gets killed, but when they go into like their grandparents' abandoned house and like one of them looks up in the corner and there's just like a nest of daddy long legs up there, like just going.
Yeah.
Like just everything like that just makes you feel like you're just in this fucking environment. You know what I mean? It's just, it's very, very immersive. And then like later on with all the fucking sound, like all the screaming and all the fucking scraping and just all, it really like just puts you in there.
Well, for me, you first started getting into that tone when the crazy kid gets into the car with the fucking Scooby gang.
Yeah.
And the conversation that's going on in there, you know, it's real odd. You know, it's very odd.
Yeah.
The tone.
I love that guy. Edwin Neal. They had like an extended interview with him on this thing that I saw on Tubi. And he said he's always very surprised. Like when he went for other jobs subsequently, like he kind of got typecast a little bit.
Yeah.
Even though he hadn't done any acting jobs like that before, he was like, he mostly did comedy and shit like that. He said, I walked into Toby Hooper's office and he's like, and he just kind of looked me up and down and he said, can you do weird? Mm-hmm. And he said the first thing that he thought of was that he had a nephew that had some mental issues. Mm-hmm. And he said, so I just started acting like my nephew and I got the job. You know what I mean? So that he said that's exactly like what his nephew acted like. Hmm. Like he was, because he's almost, he's crazy, clearly, and homicidal, clearly. But he's also like childlike in his enthusiasm, which I think like makes him even creepier. Yeah. Another thing too that I love, like the character of the cook, who was played by Jim Sydow, who has also passed away. But I love him because for a while you don't know that he's like part of the Sawyer family because he just works at this Wieslauter barbecue or whatever. And so, like, Sally runs there for help, and at first he's all helpful and grandfatherly and stuff like that, but then you can see, like, little, like, the craziness, like, starts to leak out, you know what I mean? Like, the fucking great shot where he just puts her, she thinks she's safe, and then he brings in this big fucking sack, and then she's like, what are you doing? And he's like, but, well, you know, you just get in the bag, everything's gonna be okay, and all this other kind of shit. Then he puts her in the bag, and he puts her in the truck. And he's driving and he's like, no, don't cry. Don't do that. And then he starts poking her with a stick like, you know what I mean? And it's just like the creepiest shit ever with his fucking teeth and everything. Because he seems like so nice and normal. And then like all of a sudden he's like, hey, like he's getting off on it. And it's just like super, super creepy. Oh, I should say too that the house where Leatherface and the family lived, that house is actually still standing. They've moved it from where it was. And like, I don't know how far, like not super far, but they moved it somewhere else and they restored it. And it's a restaurant now, which I think is very funny. Also, the gas station, with Wieslauter Barbecue, that has also been renovated and they turned it into a bed and breakfast, like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre themed bed and breakfast. But the other house, like the abandoned house that they were in at the beginning, that's not there anymore because that was like shitty at the beginning. But what I was gonna say was that so they made did so they did a remake of this in 2003, I think it was 2003, 2004. I actually was like not. Anytime I hear that they're gonna make a remake of like a classic like this, I'm always kind of like, oh boy. But I think I actually did go see this in the theater, and it's pretty fucking decent, I have to say. I mean, obviously, I still prefer the original, but there are some other horror reviewers. I'm not gonna mention any names, but they actually prefer the remake to the original. Now, the remake is pretty scary, and it's like way gorier. But I think they did a good job. They went back to, because I feel like I said, after two, which I love, but that was kind of more a horror comedy. So I feel like it kind of almost went like the Nightmare on Elm Street direction, with the first one's like kind of serious and scary, and then they just got funny. So the remake didn't do that. You know what I mean? They actually did try to capture like the original feel of, you know, the feel of the original. And so I would actually recommend seeing. I'd be interested to see if anybody is prefers the remake to the original. But I really did enjoy the remake, which I didn't think I would. I still like the original better, just because it has that gross snuff film 70s kind of vibe that I don't think can really be replicated by something that was made in the more modern era. But it was a very good effort, and it was like way, way better than I was expecting. But yeah, so Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it's everywhere. It's on fucking Shudder. It's on, it might be on Tubi as well. I'm not really sure. No, maybe it's not. But I think I'm for sure it's on Shudder. And it's like, if you haven't seen it, what the hell is wrong with you? If you're a horror fan, you really need to see it. It's brilliant, and really one of the most influential horror films in my top 10 easily. You know, check it out or watch it again if you haven't seen it for a really long time. We'll see you on the next one. Bye.